Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Your ultimate culinary companion.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Okay, so another week of Dishing It Out, and this week we've got the wonderful Una Leonard, who's going to be coming up on the show, and it's me, Gareth Mullins.
And me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And really looking forward to having Una on, somebody that I've been looking at her career over the past couple of years, and really blew up during COVID. She shares some amazing videos online.
Yeah, her first bakery is actually quite near me. She's in Mullingar, you know, so I'm familiar with it. And I'll be hopping on Instagram. Like, she's very creative.
Yeah, and she's just moved. She came down to Dublin there just, I think it was just at the end of November. She started doing a shop in Powers Court.
Yeah.
All there. And I popped in to have a quick look at it last week. Amazing bakes, tray bakes, brownies. And she has a really interesting story, and I think we're going to have a soon.
Well, actually, I'll probably say it to her whenever she's in, you know. I remember hearing her on the radio actually before Christmas, and it's not often I've ever done it, but I stopped at the house, didn't get out. I think she might have been on with Dermot and Dave or somebody, you know. So I'm really, I've never met her. I've been in her place, but I'm really looking forward to that chat, yeah.
Great stuff. So, guys, ingredient of the week. What have you got? Fresh ingredient.
The humble spud.
Oh, of course.
Dude, I can't believe I've even, like, not busted it out week one. The greatest gift ever given to mankind is spuds. And I'm telling you now, there's nothing that... I go to Kelly's every year in Rosslare, right? And hand on heart, when you're down there in the summer, right? Eugene, who's the amazing executive chef, sends out boiled spuds in their jackets.
Oh, yeah.
And he should get a knighthood. Do we do knighthoods in Ireland? No. I'm telling you now, right? I'll be down there.
Are they like the new season ones? Like,
yeah.
They just break a little bit?
Yeah. The flowery spud, man. Yeah. Probably, you know, Cares Pinks would be around that time of year in the summer or whatever, you know. Absolutely just beautiful at the peak of their season. And, you know, not much beats a Donegal spud. You know, I did a food festival last year in Rush, and they were all giving out to me saying, well, we send the seeds up from Rush, you know. It's not really a Donegal spud. It's a Rush spud grown in Donegal, but it's a soil. But I really mean it. Like, John Edwards in Remelton, right? He's one of the biggest potato growers in the country. And, I mean, I've been raving about his potatoes for years. And it's true to form. You know, there is certain soils in certain places. I mean, I can't buy a spud in France. They're shocking. It is an amazing place to cook in and work in.
I like those, I think they're called Roseval. They're like a small little baby potato. They're really waxy. They make amazing potatoes.
Yeah, they're almost like, they're called a Red Bliss in America, actually. Yeah, they're small.
But if you just want like an everyday mashing spud.
An everyday, you can't mash the spuds over there. No, there's too much water being held in them. They're terrible. Very, very hard to get a good flowery potato. But I just think, you know, whether it's a boulanger or a pomme dauphinoise or a chip, you name it, man. I mean, is there anything as versatile as a spud? You know what I mean? What's your favourite way of eating a spud? Baked? Mashed?
Oh, no. I love roast potatoes.
Yeah.
Like, and
how do you make your roasties?
Parboil them.
Yeah, good boy.
Leave them steam off, fluff them up.
Yeah.
And then at Christmas, for some reason, I only do it at Christmas with duck fat, but any other time of year.
You're too miserable to buy duck fat during the year, are you?
It must be, yeah. No, if I was doing it on a Sunday normally, I put a tray into the oven with vegetable oil, and then I fluff up the potatoes.
Yeah.
I don't season them yet, and then I pour the fluffed up potatoes onto the oil, and I roast them at 220 for like 20 minutes, and then I take them out, and I'll add in some rosemary, some sea salt, a couple of unpeeled bulbs of garlic that I'll crush. And at that stage, I add a little bit of olive oil and then back into the oven and just keep roasting them until they go like super crispy. That's the key. And at, like, most of the time, I buy roosters. Because that's what you can get.
Well, that's what you get, And they're very good.
Yeah, Maris Pipers for chips.
Maris Pipers for chips, yeah. You got to parboil them or steam them is even better. Let them dry.
I like those little, Kyo's do a little baby potato that are brilliant for Hasselbacks. They go really good.
They're class for Hasselbacks. You're spot on.
I mean, literally, you're right. You can go anyway.
I do my roasties very similar, only I fry them. I have a walk, I have a Le Creuset walk that's quite heat was, you know, it's thicker than the regular wok, and I put a 50-50 duck fat and vegetable oil into that with two or three decent sprigs of rosemary. Do the parboil and then team. I don't know if you know the term teaming. It's a term that daddy would have used growing up, you know what I mean? When you strain the water off the parboiled potato, put them back on to fluff them, just giving the pot a wee gentle, they're sort of rumbling over each other, tapping the side, not so much that it'll break them, and you have the heat on underneath it and evaporating as much water as possible. And then I drop in my rosemary into the oil. When you think it's nearly hot enough, I drop it in, and then whenever it's actually frying proper, in with the parboiled potatoes. And obviously that teaming part and the fluffing of the outside is where you get the crisp, and then fry them, and as you say, toss them in fine sea salt then, or whatever other seasonings that you want. But yeah, roasty is hard to beat, brother. What about you? What ingredient are you going with?
Well,
you won't beat a spud.
Probably not, but I think I will. Butter.
Ah, you played dirty. You played dirty.
Just when you pulled out the butter, I was like, well, I'm
geez, you put me back in my seat there, two footed.
Like Del Boy with the four aces.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So, Jesus. You know, as a chef, and when you start going into the world of media, you're always asked your favourite ingredients. And it's a tough one, but I think something that we can celebrate loud and proud in this country is our dairy. Our butter is better than anyone else's butter in the world. And I know the French butter is very, very good.
I wouldn't buy it, sir, over Irish butter any day of the week.
But it is good. There's very, very good quality.
Absolutely. There's some amazing French butter, yeah.
But Irish butter is where it's at. And it just gives you... I don't think there's anything that doesn't fix in cooking.
Yeah.
Like in the world of savoury. Like if you have a sauce and...
I went over to Arizona to cook a dinner a few years ago, and I went into the local now. It was a really fancy-pantsy part of this Arizona I was in, and the first thing I saw was Kerrygold, and I went, oh my God.
Isn't
that unbelievable?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the best export up there probably with potato crisps that the country has.
But look, you know, if you're making a sauce or a gravy or a soup, or, you know, your potatoes aren't... there's something just missing. A couple of knobs of butter in there, and I bet you there's very little that won't taste better when you throw a couple of knobs of butter in there.
Yeah.
And I just think it's an amazing ingredient that we should celebrate more. And, you know, every now and then you hear people about, you know, cut back on butter, and they're not talking about real country butter.
No.
They're talking about all the overprocessed crap that's out there.
You know? Well, margarine.
Yeah.
I mean, an ant won't even eat it.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's true. True story. You know, real good. And a body needs fat as well, you know.
And it's like that. I mean, I said it here a few weeks ago, but moderation is key, and also, more importantly, eating quality ingredients is key. So, and you just won't get it better than what we do here. So, this week on the podcast, we have the wonderful Una Leonard, a lady that I met a couple of years ago. I think I met you, and I thought your story was very inspiring. I have your cookbook. And we thought we'd get you in, have a bit of a chat, and you can tell us your story. So, Una, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
One of the only people, it's only happened to me two or three times, where I heard someone on the radio, got back to my gaff, didn't get out of the car. I heard you on before Christmas. I don't know who you were talking to.
Who was the other one? Did you hear yourself on the radio?
Is it okay to say it was me?
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
You know, it was. Dulcet Donegal tones. They get me every time. You know what I mean? No, I don't know.
Me and Gary were taking the piss out of me.
I don't know if it was Dermot and Dave or whatever.
Yes, could have
but,
been.
Yeah, I was listening to you, and I was really taken by just the upbeatness, I think, and everything else, and your story, whatever. I was like, going, oh, that's deadly. And then I live in Longford, I suppose, and I was like, going, geez, I haven't been to that bakery. I'm in Mullingar all the time, you know. So then I was kind of annoyed at myself. But I don't drink tea or coffee, you know. I mean, as you can tell, I like cakes. You know what I mean? So I probably should be more familiar with it. But no, it was really good. And then when Gaz said it to me a few weeks ago that he was inviting you on, I was like, oh yeah, all over that, you know. So welcome.
Thank you very much.
Dishing it out, the greatest show on earth.
Hey.
Yeah. And when did you get into baking? What we like to do is trying to find out what the whys of
why
food is a big part of your life.
Why? Because you can't cook.
Well, no, I can cook. I can cook better than I can bake.
We all like slagging pastry chefs.
Yeah, pastry chefs.
I like slagging
they
us.
Can't cook.
But the funny thing is, I'm not a pastry chef. I fell into that part. I am actually a normal chef.
Oh, are you a chef?
Okay. I'm a chef. Yeah. I'm a fully qualified trained chef. Yeah. And by accident, I fell into the pastry side of things. So I'm not trained in pastry at all.
Jesus, like, how do you accidentally become good at pastry? It's unheard
very
of.
Annoying.
Well, no, well, it's not really pastry, though. It's very more so creative. And, like, I fell into the
Whoa. You're doing yourself a disservice there. It is very much pastry.
You can make it look like the Taj Mahal and all the rest of the nonsense.
Taste amazing.
But if you can't...
Well, no, that's really important as well.
I mean, if you have no flavour or things aren't right, or whether it's a biscuit cake or Genoese sponge, you know, whatever way you go at it. But as Gareth said, don't do yourself a disservice there, because at the end of the day, you'll sell the nice looking cake once, you'll sell the tasty cake.
Yeah, but I think it's also, that's a thing like of always want to improve. Even if you have something down to a T and it's absolutely perfect and you're not meant to change it up, you're always trying to improve. And I think that's what I always do with my cakes. My design comes when I'm starting to design cake, when I'm designing, it's kind of you get into a flow of it and that's it. And I have my own style, but in the inside, it's like always.
So speaking of style then, for people that aren't familiar with you, like what do you mean by designs? And you're not just doing normal cakes? Is it tear cakes? Is it like images of stuff or celebration
so
stuff?
It would have started with like the fondant style cakes, 3D style cakes and stuff like that. And then it's like one of those things, you make a tractor and you're kind of, if I can make a tractor, I can make anything.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of progresses into that. And then you realise, oh no, I can't make a business
out of it. There's money in tractors, by the way.
No, there's no money in tractors. Not when you're spending days making a tractor. Yeah. But then it didn't work as a business to be that, like... I needed it. I went through the phase of a couple of years of having to make them cakes and I needed it for myself. But when it came to building a business, I needed to create my own style. And my own style is probably over the top a little bit, but it's a celebration. You're not getting a cake for something that you're not celebrating, I presume. So that's what it is. And I look at a cake and it's for a three-year-old and I'm like, three-year-old me would have loved that cake. Would have looked at it and went, oh my God, that is so cool.
Yeah.
So I don't hold back. Yeah.
So how did it start then? Like if you start, you just said you started as a pastry chef.
So I started as a normal chef. So I worked in kitchens. I studied in
what
GMIT. Probably the only one you'll know is Nevin Maguire's in Blackline.
So tell us the other ones as well. You'd be amazed what we know.
Yeah, so I was over in Athenry in the old barracks. I was in Zucchini's in Navan. That was actually brilliant, run by really, really nice people as well.
Yeah, good shout out to them.
And a phenomenal restaurant. If you're ever in Navan, I would highly recommend it.
Yeah.
But then I...
Where's home, by the way?
Home is Athboy, so it's kind of... I can't say Athboy, but we're very close to Athboy, but we're very much...
That's where Corrigan's from, no?
Just down the road.
Yeah.
Down the road to the right and to the left, you know?
Yeah.
He's not far from there.
I know he's from that neck.
I always get nervous when you start talking about other parts of Ireland. Blade and Brutal.
Dublin bubble.
I've never met anybody as city sicker than this.
No,
over here.
Terrible.
It's
terrible.
Unbelievable. He knows nothing outside of Dublin.
We're educated.
Excuse me, outside the north side of Dublin.
If anyone from Fáilte, Ireland are listening, please don't
bring him on a holiday somewhere in Ireland.
Bring me away.
He's a
culture.
Travel well.
But I was at home at that time, so I was working in Blackline. I was.
How long did you spend with Nevin?
I think I was just short of a year. Over a year.
When Glenn was there?
Glenn was there. Yeah, Glenn was unbelievable. Like,
and you worked at different sections, or did you just
Spurs fan, producer Ed either. In the house, fellow Spurs man, Glenn Wheeler.
How amazing is he? He's pretty
Spurs
pretty
mad.
Phenomenal. But I was working up there and I was during my college. I was just finishing my college. I was just finishing my college. But I was really, really depressed at the time. Like,
and did you know?
At the time, no. I was numb. I was in a bubble. I was you don't know because you've never went through it before. So I didn't know what had happened. So a lot of things had happened in my personal life. I was unable to cope with them. I had an eating disorder as well. So I was bulimic and anorexic at the time.
Jesus
which was really
Christ.
Tough because I had such a love for food. Like I loved being in the kitchen. I loved learning. I went in there and I was on different sections. So I would have been Yeah, kind of thrown through. Yeah. Like there's plenty of sections. You were working alongside whoever was there. And then at the time, I remember their head pastry chef was leaving and I kind of moved over to that section. I was on that section at the time, so I never come off it. But I used to go in and do the morning, the breakfast section as well, because they were great crack. If you ever want to work in Gold Crack, like the best crack is the breakfast people that come
That's
in.
Because they always know they're going home.
They're going home early and you still have another 12 hours to leave. So I used to go in and spend the days in there and it was absolutely brilliant. But I was struggling so much at home and struggling.
Were you hiding that from Nevin at the time or were you able to?
I was hoping I was hiding it, but I don't think like Glenn definitely knew. Glenn really helped me and helped my mum because at the time I had tried to commit suicide a couple of weeks prior to doing that.
And
after coming out of hospital, I went into a rehab clinic. So the rehab clinic resulted in me being bedbound at home for quite a long time, and the nurses used to come and administer my medication because we weren't allowed to have any medication in the house because I had to try to attempt suicide with an overdose. So my mum, and I know I've a mother or a parent contacts for a young adult now into workplace, it's kind of like, oh no, but she had asked for a bit of relief from me. I didn't want to leave the kitchen because it was my... It was my only hope. It was the only thing I loved. It was my safe space. It really was my safe space, like beyond you could even imagine. So after a couple of weeks of rehab at home and getting myself into a better place, I wanted to finish out my term there. So I went back up to Black Line and my mum left her position at home and came and lived with me. And we were just after losing our granny and my sisters and brothers were grieving as well and everybody was at home, so she up and left to make
good
sure that
mommy.
I could, yeah, she's a good mammy, she up and left to stay with me, and I couldn't eat at the time, so Glenn used to actually leave the food for my mom, so my lunch break was the mom used to get, like they were really good and really caring and really understanding, and I can't imagine what it was like from their side because now having 20 so staff myself and you look after them and you care for them so much, I can understand from their point of view how tough it would have been and like what you do in that situation and
well,
how
look,
difficult it would
Glenn,
have been.
Glenn is a great guy. Carmel, who's the chef there now, would have been
there
too.
She was there as well, yeah. She was
She's
phenomenal.
Amazing. And sure, look, Nevin and Imelda are the
so
salt of the earth.
And
you know,
so lovely.
Yeah, decent.
Yeah.
There's a reason he's so well liked and he's just a really good culture.
And you know,
there, you know?
Really get asked that quite a lot. And what was it like? And what was it like up there? And I really do believe that
I couldn't have been in a better place.
This is it.
Do you remember?
I remember working up there.
But do you remember, like, because
that time?
I am asking you because you said people keep asking you. But
yeah,
is it vivid, the memory, or is it a little bit cloudy? Or
it's cloudy, but I've been going through therapy for a good few years, and a lot of it is coming back to me. I was only there this morning, so I'm still working on it to this day, and I still have my ups and downs. But that part of that time, which was really, really tough and difficult, I wouldn't have remembered it straight away afterwards. But now the memory is coming back.
Because you hit me for six there when you said that. I wasn't ready for that.
I was so blessed.
That's tough.
I was blessed with where I was. I do believe someone was looking down on me and I was in...
Definitely, yeah.
I was there in that kitchen. Like, for them to give me an opportunity to come back after what had happened. And I remember having, on my way back up to Black Line, it must have been a couple of weeks after that, I was really on my journey to recovery. Now, when we talk about these, like a journey to recovery can take 3 or 4 years. Like, it didn't happen overnight. So this was still very raw at the time. And I had a panic attack, which would be very normal for me. I could overthink something, and I was driving at the time. And for me to calm down, I could scrape my hands or scrape. And I hated my body so much that I could scrape it until I was panicking. And I remember it so vividly. And every time I passed the area that I pulled in, and I had taken 2 Valium. There was 2 Valium hidden in my car because I rang Mam in a panic to tell her that I couldn't breathe and this is what happens. And when you can't breathe, you can pass out when you can't breathe for so long. And I remember the team from Black Line were closer to me than Mam was, so I was halfway there. And I don't really remember it that well, but I just remember them looking after me so well.
Yeah,
and they got down to me as quick as they could.
Yeah.
I was part of a family up there.
Yeah,
and that's
part
what it
of
is.
The team.
That was it. It was it was a family.
And you know, it's funny because I don't think you hear this story enough when it comes to where professional world and like my experience as a kitchen's, even though I've said it a couple of times on here of being shaky, I could tell you loads of other times where I can have moments like that.
Yeah.
Not necessarily anything as horrific as what you've just told us, but you know, people having accidents or people losing somebody in the middle of a service, taking a really awful phone call. And I think that the nice thing about kitchens is that you are part of a family or a brigade, or, you know, and there is horror stories out there, of course.
There's no two ways about it. I mean, there was a period there, like a handful of years ago, when I went into, like, I won't say where, but it was a corporate role in a corporate world. And the one thing that dramatically stood out to me was I was surrounded by people that thrived on others pushing others down and Muppet. I mean, it was unbelievable. You know what I mean? Because in kitchens, right, there's a culture when you're in there. And, you know, I was in Viewmount House in Longford in Ireland for 10 years after coming back from Boston, and not a million miles from where you are now. And I remember in there, like, you know, if somebody got in the weeds, whether it's pastry or it's me up at the pass or whatever it'll be, like, the culture is everybody.
They're all like going down.
Yeah, but
you pull them back onto the ship.
That's a culture. I'm 30 years in professional kitchens since last summer, and I've never ever known a kitchen, any kitchen I've been in, that everybody just, it's an unwritten rule. Everybody downs tools, pulls whoever it is out of the shits, out of the weeds, and they get stuck in it. So then to go through a period where I was witnessing from afar, people reveling and others going through bad times, and it's almost like they were twisting the knife and doubling down on it, you know what I mean? But I mean, I'm thrilled to hear that the boys and girls in Nevin's kitchen did that. I'm not one bit surprised either, though.
Neither,
I mean, I know a lot of them really on a personal level.
I think in them sort of kitchens, and I know myself now when I'm building my own team, it's not so much who's the most skilled person, it's who's going to fit into your culture. And I think people now are copping on to the whole culture within a workplace, and it's not just in all these tech companies.
You say you were at therapy again this morning, and is that just because every now and again, or is it? I mean, you don't need to.
I'm happy to talk about it, because I do believe that. I'm not massively open about it. If anyone asks me about it, I speak about it because it might help that one other person. But I'm at therapy at the moment. I had a shit show of a couple of weeks. I've been very low. I've been feeling really depressed, and I went back to where I needed to.
Oxygen. It's like the winters here are 84 years long.
Yeah. And I think actually a lot of us in this industry probably feel like this in January, because you're coming off such a high adrenaline December and November, whatever it is, your busiest period of the year. You're rushing. It's like, then what are you supposed to do after?
Are you part of the bacon team now still, or have you enough staff that you can pop out?
So I've enough staff. I'll sit in when I need to for the busiest periods, and I suppose I can do any part of the business. So the business is not just your bakery that you see at the front. So there's an online bakery as well. We have a wholesale side of it, we have obviously the PR side of things as well.
You enjoy that, I think, too?
I do. I actually enjoy a whole, I like it changes every time. Like yesterday, we were dealing with the website crashing because we were trying to get our Valentine's stuff up. And then this year, thank you very much. Today, we're like in the middle of, we're doing loads of meetings and planning for the years. We're doing Christmas meetings and Valentine's for next year. Like everything is so different. And I love that.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Giving you a helping hand with your food frustrations.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
At Arizona State University, we've made online education better, smarter, and more personalized so you can go further in your aspiring field.
I decided to pursue medicine once I realized that ASU did have the online program for biological sciences. You're still required to learn the same curriculum. You're still being tested on the same content that anyone would be tested on in person. The comprehensiveness of the program prepared me so well for medical school.
Explore over 300 programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
So just bring us a little bit past then, like you came out of Black Lion and you got well, and then what happened then?
I didn't get well. So I came out of Black Lion and my next stage of my rehab was actually to go into counselling, which wasn't right for me at the time. And I ended up having a relapse and a second suicide attempt, which left me in hospital an awful lot longer than the first time and left me an awful lot more vulnerable after that one. And that was when my baking journey began, because I was at home and I didn't have a kitchen to go into. I had a little nephew with curly brown hair and beautiful big brown eyes that used to lie in the bed with me. I couldn't have mirrors on view. I couldn't have windows on view, because if I seen myself, I would have had a panic attack. Extremely anorexic at the time, bulimic. I couldn't hold food. I was trying to, my intake was probably about a quarter of an apple a day. So at the stage, we were trying to introduce more food. So with that, the nurses were coming and we were making plans to, instead of having one bowl of peas a day, we were splitting the same bowl that I could see the peas in into two bowls. So it looked like I was eating twice a day, and then you introduce bit by bit after that. So they were coming more often to the house, and any other Irish person, you want to have something nice for them.
Yeah.
So I threw myself into the kitchen to bake something for them to have.
No way.
I felt so bad that we're taking day out. Like, I know it was their job, but I was like, then you needed something nice for them. And like, I was still, from the outside, I was still really uppy. If you've seen me, I was happy. I was playing camogie, except for the skirt was falling off me and the jersey was down to my ankle. It's like, I was still living my day-to-day life. I was extremely self-conscious. I looked sick, if anyone knew me, but I was still living. I was just a really numb person. I was really, really numb, and I didn't care for myself and I didn't love myself.
Did you know why you were feeling numb? Like, I mean, did you have things that was making you feel that way? Or was it more a case of, like, what is wrong?
I'm figuring it out now. Money coming to it now. Like, I'm literally, that's 10 years, more than 10 years ago, 12, 13, 14 years ago. I'm only learning about that now.
Right.
But as the nurses came, I was baking more. Now, they were probably burned.
They loved your gas
probably,
then.
I don't know if I did. I'd say they probably broke a few teeth with the stuff I was handing them.
Isn't that funny? I have an uncle, a daddy, Sonny, used to walk every night. And when I think the amount of shite bread and
the stuff
cookies,
you gave them. Yeah.
The muck I gave that man. So I know where you're from.
And do you know what? They feel really bad for you. Because they're like, oh God, we can't be that bad. So they're like, really nice. Really nice.
You know,
nice.
You're looking at their jaws. He's eating so weird, you know.
And
what's
like,
wrong with your
face? Keep eating it then. If it's nice, keep eating it. And you're like, But I kept doing that. And then my nephew asked me to make him a cake. I've never made a cake before. Like,
this is the little curly-headed fella.
So cute. Yeah, oh, my God. But anyway, he's now 14 next week. But anyway.
Oh, he loves that. You call him real cute.
And like, I named the bakery after him. So his date of birth is the 2nd of the 2nd, 2010. That's where 2210 came
you,
from.
I was wondering.
So, thanks for ruining my question.
Sorry.
Ed, we need more questions.
So I keep telling him now, I'm like, you're never going to get into any nightclubs under.
That's a lovely story. When he was young and pretty and curly brown hair, when he's a little prick walking around mum and car, when he's 17 and a fag hanging out of his mouth, and it's just going to be like, get out of the shop.
We're lucky. He's still a really, now if it was his younger brother, he'd probably go wild.
He'll go through a period where he'll annoy you.
I made him this John Deere cake. Now, when I tell you this took 5 days to make, it was stale by the time but anyway,
you gotta do the John Deere's big.
You gotta do John Deere's. So I made a John Deere cake, and now a good engine on it.
And then took 55 photos off it, so you never had to do it again.
Two photos of it.
No way.
But at the time, I wasn't making cakes for people, so I literally it was more of a thing that I set up at Mam's table. Like it was in the table, like everyone was doing.
John Deere's a tractor, right?
Dude.
Oh, Jesus Christ, much.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I just trailed it out.
It kind of is like a car, but it has like a loader on the front of it.
Well, they do lawnmowers as well. But
I'll
tell you what, though, man, it's one of the greatest gifts that you'll ever have is taking
one. You need to get him a gator.
Take him on a tractor run.
Anyway, I made the tractor for him. Absolutely, we were all chuffed with it. It looked like a tractor. And I think the neighbour then asked me for a cake. And I was like, if you don't mind it being stale, I'll make you a cake because it takes me 5 days to make.
What was inside?
I know, it was actually only a chocolate biscuit, so I didn't.
That's the key. Chocolate biscuit
all the way for the first couple of years.
Yeah.
And then it just happened like that.
Even I can make them once.
Yeah. I thought people were just being nice to me by like, oh God, there's a fragile girl. Let's ask her to make it. So then the cakes were, I started like making cakes and I was so, I actually got, there's one in particular. It's actually, it was meant to be a donkey, but I'm going to show you the picture of it afterwards. It is not a donkey. It looks like the donkey long. I can't. There's more teeth than donkey in it, but
oh, no.
I'll give you the picture so you can actually show with the with yeah. this, because it's the funniest thing. Some of the cakes didn't resemble cakes at all, but that wasn't what it was about for me. It was being in the kitchen. Yeah. It was in my safe space. It was hours would go by and I was in a place that I felt safe. I was happy with what I was doing.
Your mammy must have just been, I mean, I know, like, you know, reading up a wee bit about the relationship before you come in, you know, and just being a parent myself, you know, like, it's it must have been a mad period.
I remember
you were living with her.
Yeah, that's the, I remember asking mom when I was writing the book, so 2 years ago, and I remember just having to sit down with mom and for the first time ever ask her side of the story.
Yeah, that was hard to say.
That was tough. Yeah. That was tough because I've never actually went there and it broke my heart. I remember asking her what was it like, and the tears were rolling down her face when she said, I used to go into the bed at night and just go over and make sure you were still there. Yeah. And then I was asking my sisters on their side of things. Well, my sisters is in college in Sligo at the time, and it hits me every time I even talk about it. I don't talk about it too much, but Mam used to send a message out to my two sisters to say that we survived another day every day, and he used to wait for that message to come through to make sure that we were okay.
Right.
And that they were going to come home, not to a funeral, and they were going to come home to the house, even though it wasn't a happy house at the time. Mm. Obviously, it was, everyone was on running and around. Dogs. Yeah. But, yeah.
Wow.
And I do feel there's a part of me that went through the guilt of, like, what did I take away from them for them? Because this is not, like, 2 weeks. This is 2 or 3 years of a really tough time that they didn't know what was happening.
They must be so proud of you now.
Like, they'll never tell me that.
No, they do. I bet you know it, but yeah. they know. Sure, look at now, you're.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, they're very supportive of me, and
yeah, of course.
They continue to take the piss out of me.
Good.
Proper order.
Yeah.
Well, you're in the right place.
Yeah. Oh no, you don't get a nice sound. Like, they don't say that nice about you. You go in there and you get ripped to shreds.
But one of the questions I had, and I'm going to pull it back to food again, is that, like, in that time when you were creating recipes and you were trying to develop yourself as a baker, which subconsciously maybe you were doing that, how was the tasting process and the development process? It just wasn't happening.
No, my dad really liked it.
Oh, right, okay. Okay, so you used someone else.
Yeah, well, it was there. I can't remember fully. I do remember, like, taking and spitting, and then like, I was bulimic.
Right, okay, yeah, okay.
I used to have it down to a tea, 12 minutes, glass of water, boom.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, you had, oh, these things were all, like, done to a T. Like, you knew everything. Like, you knew what to do.
And then when did the bake, was the bakery the next part of that then? Or?
So, up until 2 years ago, there was no plan.
Right, okay.
So this is all just rolled over.
Oh, it's only 2 years, all of this.
No.
No, but I mean the bakery and everything.
No, the bakery is 10 years this February.
All right,
so
okay,
this was, so I had just, I went back then to college. So I had one semester left in college that I needed to graduate. And once I...
But Athlone or Dublin? Or,
Galway.
Oh, Galway, yeah.
So I went back and finished and graduated my last semester. And
that was in culinary arts?
That was in culinary arts and business. Yeah.
Good school.
And I graduated on the 14th of November. And I went in to Mullingar. It was in the early in that January. I was just after turning 22. And I saw this little shop and it had turnkey on it, €750, called whatever. So I went into the shop and I had an overwhelming feeling that I was in the right place at the right time. And I told your man there that I wanted it. So I rang my mum and dad to tell them that I was opening a bakery in Mullingar. And they're like, oh Jesus, oh no, oh shit, what is she doing? And my whole thing when I set up that bakery and I walked into that shop that day, it was, first off, it was the first time I had a good feeling in a very long time.
Right.
And
yeah.
I didn't have a plan to open a bakery. I didn't know what I was going to do.
Baking bilio at this time.
I was baking, yeah, I was doing a bit. Very busy, like, yeah, for a small kitchen at home. I was wrecking mom's house and all the presses, and mom doesn't even have a kitchen.
Baking and even the smallest place.
And I was doing it through the night because there was the only time that nobody was in at night.
Yeah,
at least you were getting the mise en place in.
Yeah.
That was your future.
That was it. Like, literally, I knew I was going to be working through the night. Yeah. So I went into this space, knew it was the right place, knew it was the right time, rang the woman that owns it first and told her that I wanted it. And then I rang my mom and dad to tell them I was doing it. I knew by the sign in the store, like, shit, where are you getting the money for this?
Imagine the text she sent when she hung up the phone.
Yeah, I literally was like, I remember looking at my bank account, and because I had an overdraft from my student loan.
Deadly.
So I had my loan done and I had minus €750 in my draft. And I was like, oh, jeez, that's loads of money. That's loads of money. Yay! I can do this. And then I said to myself, I was getting paid for a wedding cake. And I was like, that'll pay for the first month. That'll be fine. Like, and then I went to the credit union. At the time, you could sit down in front of your neighbour and just tell them that you need a new car, even though you're having to drive it in the car. And you're like, I need €10,000. So I opened up the bakery with €10,000. Me and Mam ripped up the floors. We put the floors back down with a YouTube video. My dad made the countertops. I never used a till system before in my life. And whatever equipment was still in the cafe at the time was what we used to set it up.
Thought it was a coffee machine there.
Oh, no, there was no coffee machine. No coffee for the first 4 years. Couldn't afford that.
Oh, really?
No. No coffee, it was just a bakery, like, yeah.
Okay.
So that was it, got cracking. Mam done the accounts.
And was there an oven and all in it, or what?
No, I had to buy the ovens. So I remember getting the ovens to where, like, €800 each, so you can imagine.
Jeez, that's good going, but they're obviously, the cake's rising.
They were actually perfect. Well, I didn't know anything about ovens. This was bigger than the one I had at home, so I was like, there was a sink, there was an oven, there was a mixer out of Lidl, so I got two of them. They were red, and the noise out. Like, no, everything was done.
But you know, it's amazing though. I stood in the kitchen of Viewmount a year or so ago, right? There was architects there, there was builders there, crying about the kitchen, going, oh, the state of this, or whatever. Like putting in a new one, asking me to design a new one. Everyone, builders, new owners, the whole nine yards, all giving out about the kitchen. I was like, hey, the only one here not saying anything negative about this space is me.
I
fucking won Restaurant of the Year standing in here for 10 years.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
It's grand.
Everything was second hand. James was rewiring Banbury. You get a shock every few months off it, right? You just laughed and says, the fucker got me again. But it was amazing that everyone was giving out and giving out and giving out. But the place meant the world to me, right? Yeah. I'm like going, I could tell you every 3 or 4 inches of that salamander where it gets warm, where it's not really working and where it's doing whatever. But it was amazing for all the wee bits and pieces.
Yeah.
So listening to you there now go on about the bits, you probably loved that.
Oh, I loved it. I remember being on Dundeel and picking up these granite slabs that were left over from a hotel. And my dad put legs on them.
And you'll find so much.
Oh my God, they were the best thing I ever got.
You still got them?
No. I couldn't get
them. She's too fancy now.
Yeah. Best thing I ever got.
They were too big.
Fucking marble all over the gaff.
No, there is no marble, tell you that. It's that fake laminate marble is all I have. But yeah, it worked, and it was there for the first 5 or 6 years before starting making any changes.
Do you know if Yana even thought of it, went to one of the coffee suppliers and say, hey, listen, I'll buy your coffee, give me a machine.
Oh yeah, no, sure. I didn't even know. Nobody took me seriously. You're talking about a 22-year-old fragile-looking girl. That every time a supplier came to me, I could not get somebody to. I was going down Super Value every day to buy my ingredients. Nobody would give me anything.
We've been through that, yeah.
And I remember, Manisa, you can bleep out words, can't you?
Oh yeah.
Bleep. I remember were the only ones that would actually deliver to the door, but I had to pay the driver. CLD.
Yeah, well, they'll do that at the very beginning with a lot of, even the early days up there, like people coming and saying, I'm not sure, you know, deliver down here. So, one wee quick story. I kept receipts for all the beef I bought for 9 years and then sent it to a certain supplier and said, that's why you closed down.
You had a pretty moment, did you?
Every penny. was there a pretty woman reference there? I've never seen that. No.
What?
No.
Oh, God.
But anyway.
She walks into a shop and she's treating very poorly and then she walks back with the bag.
How do you like that?
That's how much I would have spent on beef. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, no.
Word for word.
I've had one other supplier that I really, really, really wanted at the beginning because they have all the really nice, fine things and I couldn't get. And they came to me 2 years ago and they were pleading and begging they were going to give me everything at the best price. And I said no because I'm giving it to the people that were there. And that's it.
Right, you are.
Yeah.
And come here then, we're going to ask you about your book.
Yes.
That you brought in.
Yes.
I can see it. What's your book?
Sweet Therapy. So it is what it says. So it was...
In a, please, you didn't bring your own book, did you?
I did. Oh my God. Not see from me how thin I am? No. Hold on a minute here.
So, this, we cannot.
This morning when I was running around like a headless chicken, I didn't realize. No. All my books are in boxes. I don't have books.
Oh my God.
It's a beautiful book. I actually own the book. So.
Yeah, I do. No, that's it now anyway. And I don't look like her on it anyway.
Let me see it.
And this book...
I actually had to run into my shop in Powers Court to get it because I forgot to bring a book. And I was
so now you have a shop in Powers Court as well as the shop back up home.
Yes.
Did you, and where is the drive coming from to move that on, do you think?
There's a lot of like, what's next? I'm not influenced and I'm not motivated by finances or money or charts or anything like that. I'm influenced by what feels right and what's the next step and what... And to be honest with you, everything kind of has organically happened. So like, with the book...
Did you enjoy the process of doing the book?
I did, and it was tough as well.
Yeah, so obviously, I'm just looking at it here and there's obviously a lot about... The story that you've just been telling us here at the beginning, and then leading into the recipes, well, that looks nice.
And your bakes and your live bakes all through COVID were epic. Remember a lot of them with your mum, were they?
Yeah, a whole lot of them were mum. Oh, they were great crackers.
And was she a really amazing baker as well, or because you played with the
pizza? She liked to think she was.
Yeah.
I know she still bakes the best apple tart ever. Like
yeah, of
unreal.
Course she does.
She makes an unreal brown bread when it's straight out of the oven, but I don't like it the next day. I can't say it. And she does the odd thing that are really nice. I can't do as good as her. Like,
yeah.
I had a slice of her apple tart the other day and it literally was a memory on a plate.
Yeah.
It felt like I was sitting in my granny's cottage eating it. It was like everything that my granny used to
make. And you cream with your apple tart? Or do you just have it the way it is?
Huh?
Do you have cream with it or just the way it is?
No. If we visitors, there's cream.
Yeah, okay.
No, there's not.
Just horse into it.
Yeah. I go just plain apple tart.
Yeah.
But no, she does. She likes bacon. When we were kids, now, Mum was really, really good. There was always a breakfast, lunch, dinner cooked for us. It was always a home-cooked meal. There was never...
Same dinner, same days every week? No.
Well, no, she would have... She would have changed things out of it. Yeah. Like, you could have got that rotten mince dinner on Monday and you'd be like, oh, here's a bad week coming out.
Mince. There's nothing like it.
She's just mince and gravy and onions. I'm like, oh!
Yum.
And then like on a Friday you might come home and she might have like an oven pizza in and you'd be like yes
yeah landed.
But we never had like there was
you
never
get pizza before Gladiators on a Saturday night.
Do you remember Gladiators?
Loved it Gladiators ready off. I know
oh no, you can be watching that again. She'd never give us like sweet things. There was no bars or biscuits in her house. She'd always bake like plain buns, cherry buns or something like that, or a brack or something. So that's what we were used to as a sweet sweet thing to us would be something like that. So yeah,
it's beautiful. It's a really nice book. Yeah, what's the favourite, like, are you, do you prefer the cakes, tray bakes or breads, or like is there...
I'm a savoury gal.
Yeah
I love my savoury food. Love my dinners. Love really nice food.
And do you still cook?
Yeah, I cook every day. I love it. It's still my place. So even though I could be in the kitchen all day baking, I still can't wait to go home and cook a dinner.
Yeah.
Love it.
Spuds.
Yeah.
Giddy up.
Not like it.
Because I love spuds.
I like a Sunday roast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
My kids won't eat spuds. They're weirdos. Yeah. They just drive me mental, you know. Yeah. None of them like spuds. Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it?
That is bizarre. Maybe they're just going through a phase.
I don't know. I hope it is. Hey, I make a roast dinner, go to all the baller, and then I'm standing there cleaning up afterwards. Like, why, yet again, have I done this to myself?
Ah, they come around. They're still quite
brutal.
Yeah.
Have you any wee dudes?
No.
Yet? No.
No.
Yeah. That's why you're so bubbly and happy.
That's why I have time to be here.
Well, listen, it's been a pleasure to meet you, Una, and thanks a million for coming in.
Thank you for your honesty. Yeah.
You're incredibly brave, and
yeah,
I'm glad that the kitchen was. In some way a route for you back into what seems like happiness, like you're flying it.
Yeah.
And do you know, anybody getting into business, it's just so admirable, you know what I mean? But in the face of adversity like you've done it, it's geez,
but I also think when you go into business and you have this fuck it, what's the worst can happen?
Yeah.
If I went into business knowing what business was going to be like, I wouldn't have went in. I went in being like
you make a lot of very, very smart business decisions from where I'm sitting. And I'm around a lot of business people because of the job that I do.
Yeah.
And I would say your branding is like really, really, especially after meeting you, I think it's so smart.
Uh-huh.
And I purposely walked over to Powers Court because I wanted to see the shop. And I went, Like, she just nails every little thing that she's doing. I say that about your book.
Oh, well, now I have a great team. I do have a great team.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, like, I mean, like, that's what it's about. And yeah. I think you spoke about it with the Black Lion. And,
yeah.
Like, it's when people ask, oh, you, did you cook this? And, like, it's a ballroom with 250 people. And I'm like, yeah, I helped with it. Like, it wasn't just me. There's more than me back there. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly,
but,
yeah.
You know, that's what makes it, like, yeah. a good leader, a good business person, a good head chef, a good person, I think, a lot
well,
of the
I think
time.
I was given one of the best pieces of advice that I was ever given in business, and I stick by it all the time. Always higher or better than you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right. Surround yourself yeah. with people
Surround
that
yourself,
are better.
And I sit in there and I actually learn from them. We've two new hires who have started in January. So we are expanding the team and we continue to do so. But I'm sitting there absorbing these fresh eyes.
Yeah. Like, absolutely.
What do they see? What do they think? What can we take out of that? And I'm like, oh, never actually know.
Don't happening. Build a team of centre forwards. You need a good spine. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And I think it's
But really also good. I think you need to, like, you need to have the confidence to recognise that the people in your team need development and recognise their strengths and then, you know.
And then let them rock and roll. Leave them off.
Yeah. That's it.
Awesome.
Okay, Una, that's it. Thanks a million. That wasn't too
painful.
Thanks,
guys. No, yeah. That was wonderful.
Thanks so much.
And now it is time for our culinary conundrums or questions. I don't know what we call them. But anyway, over to producer Ed, the master.
Thank you, Gary. I'm going to get myself a jingle for this.
Just I feel Please
naked.
Do.
I feel naked. Yeah. Okay. Hello, Gareth and Gary. Just love the show, learning lots. I will be catering for about 40 people this May for my daughter's communion. Any tips? I'm thinking I might prepare ahead some shoulder of pork, pulled pork, served with crusty rolls, salad, sweet corn. Could I make the pulled pork a day or two in advance? We'll probably make a chocolate cake and have ice cream for the kids. I don't have any help and family don't ever bring along dishes as everyone is traveling. Okay, that's a lot to take in. Second question, why is brisket beef or beef cheeks so hard to find? None of my local butchers and meat have them. Is a factory shop for beef an option? Thanks for a great show. That comes in from Fiona. Wow.
Well, Fiona, welcome to my world. Nobody brings anything to my house when they come here. Yeah. They just come hungry. They want grub. But you've hit the nail on the head. Really good shout doing the pulled pork. And absolutely, in fact, I would go as far as saying it's absolutely even better to do it like ahead of time. There's no chance you're going to be able to do a dish like that on the day anyway. It takes too long. You'd want to be up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And there's an awful lot of manipulation and work involved in it. But just what you said there, you're going to do the crusty rolls. You're going to have all your sides already. All can be done a day, possibly even two ahead of time. I'd recommend a lovely little celery remoulade, just if you want to fancy up the coleslaw. That's just julienne of celery, whole grain mustard, a little bit of Dijon mustard as well, and some mayonnaise, lime juice, lemon juice, salt, white pepper, and maybe a little bit of parsley or coriander. It's beautiful. But the pulled pork, you keep your juices. You have your pork done the day before, as you mentioned, on your roasting tray. Retain your juices, strain your juices into a separate pot, and then the day that you want to use them, bring those juices to a boil, pull your meat out of the fridge, and pour as much of the juices as you can all over the meat, and then wrap it with tin foil again and just put it into an oven that's maybe a little bit around 150 or 160. You just want to reheat it, put it in early and reheat it slowly, and it'll soften as well obviously as it comes up, and then lift it out to serve. Make sure that there's no juices obviously whenever you go to serve it, and you just want it coming out hot. But definitely, yeah, you can do it ahead of time. As for the beef cheeks, I'm kind of quite lucky. I have a beef supplier, the Johnstone Beef, that I would have used whenever I was in the restaurant, and quite often I would ring up the boys and just ask them for cheeks whenever I want them, in the set and the other. It's not something I've actually asked my own local butcher for. I'd be amazed if they weren't able to get them for you with a wee bit of advance notice, especially anybody that's bringing in, you know, whole carcasses and hanging them. If anybody that you know, any butcher that you know is doing a wee bit of dry aging themselves, they'll have cheeks to hand, you know. Just ask them.
Yeah, I mean, you've nearly covered it all there, but the two things I would say, the pitfalls around doing pulled pork is that you don't, it becomes dry. You really have to think about what you're serving with it. And I think one little key is if you just salt whatever cut of meat is that you're going to do. Did she say shoulder or belly?
She said shoulder.
Shoulder, yeah. So what I would say is if you are doing a shoulder, I would also buy a little bit of belly because that extra little bit of fat when you're doing a bit of pulled pork.
Well, that's why I said the remoulade too.
Yeah, exactly. It helps, yeah. And then you're just going to salt it so that the day before you're going to cook it, you're going to just season it really well with some salt and some fennel seeds. If you have them, leave them in your fridge. The next day you take it out, you pat it dry, and then you follow your recipe for pulled pork. And then,
That's key, actually. It's a good call. I missed that, yeah, because you got to get flavour. You got to get flavour into pork, you know what I mean? She knows what she's at.
Yeah, and then when Gary was saying they're reducing down your liquor, I like to put in a little bit of corn flour with that, just to thicken it slightly. And when you're adding that into your pulled pork, it just catches onto it, yeah, a little bit better. I think it's a good little trick. And then I would say to you, around the brisket and the cheek, you have to just go and talk to your butcher. That's the key. So yeah, you just go in and tell them what you're trying to do. I don't know what the dish is that you're going to try and do, but if you're really struggling to get cheeks or brisket, go down the road of pork short or beef short ribs. It will give you the same bang for your buck. Not as difficult. Cheek is a very difficult thing to cook. I'm not saying you can't cook it, but I would start with a Jacob's ladder or a beef rib is a lovely cut of meat, and I'm assuming you're going to braise it in some way because that's what you have to do with a cheek. And then you can go and brisket is a tricky enough piece of meat to cook.
Well, I would say the cheeks aren't too bad now. It's just time, really. But the brisket is not for the faint of heart.
No, it's tricky. Yeah. But what I like about cooking short ribs is they don't take as long as a cheek. And there's more fat in them, so they're more forgiving. And of course, you know, I mean, cook beef cheeks, no bother, like all day long, cook bricks all day long, but I'm just giving you one that's a little bit handier.
Great stuff. Thank you, Fiona, for that. The next one comes in from Bill. More of a statement of agreement than a question, but I will read it out. I enjoy the episode featuring Mark Moriarty. I totally agree with Mark that a lot of Michelin star restaurants follow unprofitable business models that prize recognition ahead of economic benefits. And yes, a lot of them just come and go. I have a lot more time for fine dining restaurants that stay open week after week, year after year. Regards, Bill.
Come on, Bill.
All right, Bill. Settle down, Bill.
It's like a letter to the Times. Dear sir, madam. Okay, this is a great one as well. So, hi, Gareth and Gary. Big fan. Look forward to your podcast every Wednesday. Love it. Cooking is my number one passion. While I can't bake to save my life, my family and friends regard me as an excellent home cook. My favourite day of the year is Christmas Day, not for the gifts, but because it's the day where a month of planning and prepping all comes together. My husband delighted me with a requested Christmas present. Okay, my pronunciation here needs to be corrected probably a bit. A set of Wusthof knives. As you guys were talking about them, so I had to have them, love them. Problem is, my knife skills are pretty rubbish. I'm talking basics like chopping veggies. I'm quick, but my technique leaves a lot to be desired. I've watched TV chefs, etc., videos online, but I can't quite get it. Do you know if there's any real-life courses in Dublin to attend to learn basic fundamentals? Please keep dishing out. Coming, guys. Thank you, Catherine from Dublin.
Well, Catherine, the first thing that springs to mind there is the word quick. The last thing you should be with new knives, or if you're only becoming new to trying to chop like a pro, quick is the very, very last thing. Technique must come before speed. Speed will just come naturally, and there isn't a good chef alive today that cares less about speed. Accuracy really is the big thing. Look, YouTube is the mecca for little videos. I mean, I imagine that there's any amount of little tutorials up there. You've obviously done the first thing that I imagine Gareth would suggest, and you bought good knives first and foremost. They've got to be sharp. They've got to be high quality. There's nothing like a blunt knife to cut you. And the next big thing then would be, look, for a wee quick one here, I'd just say is the blade almost always needs to be brushing against your fingers, your forefingers, and the tips of your fingers from that first knuckle down need to be tilted or inverted inwards. So when the knife's coming down or the knife was to slip or whatever, your nails are down, your hand or the fore part of your fingers is against the blade. It's almost leaning forward. So if the knife does slip or come down, your fingers aren't tucked in under the blade. But just go on YouTube, go through a few tutorials, and please, please, please go slow, stay slow. And when slow is just coming to you with your eyes closed, then you can worry about pace.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot to add to that, but all I would say is one thing I see, the most common mistake that I do, or I see with people using a new knife, is that they're lifting the knife up and down off the board.
Okay.
And that's like a really poor technique.
Yeah.
So if she got a set of Wusthofs, she's definitely had to get in a French chopping knife. So a French, normally 6 or 8 inches long, and it's one of those where at the butt of the knife is longer, and then it goes up in a curve, and it's shaped like a boat up to okay. the tip. The reason it's like that is because it'll rock as you're chopping. And I'm doing it there so you can see it. But all you do, rather...
I thought you were doing crouchy celebration.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than lifting it up and down, you actually keep the knife on the board and you get that rocking motion. And then once that becomes habit, then, as Gary rightfully said, the speed comes, or it doesn't come.
Well, it's like learning an instrument, isn't it? I mean, someone says, how do I learn to play the guitar quick? You go, well, no, that's not the point.
Yeah.
People see... No. You have to learn your technique first.
Yeah,
it's exactly the same with knife skills. And come here. Unfortunately, it's part of the learning. You'll get little nicks along the way. If you get, normally when you cut yourself, you know you're going to cut yourself, and you so you know, trust your instincts, take it nice and slow, and be safe.
One more from Mary. Gareth and Gary, I'm a huge fan of your podcast. It becomes my go-to while out walking. Mind you, I do get funny looks when I laugh out loud from some of Gary's comments.
Oh, thank you very much.
I did Gareth's cookery courses during COVID and I learned so much. Each Christmas since I watched the video on removing the legs from the turkey, my husband will only eat the dark meat, so I now cook one leg on Christmas Day for him, then the others on St. Stephen's Day. So to say you can't teach an old dog new tricks is totally wrong. I'm a sucker for gadgets, and I totally agree with buying a Kenwood Chef. I got a present of one nearly 40 years ago, and it's still going strong. You were discussing portion sizes a couple of weeks ago, and I feel that the size of the dinner plates sold now are far too large. I have no problem having a meal in a restaurant that doesn't fill, sometimes even half the plate, but at home, I feel I'm trying to fill the plate. I'm heading out for a walk and looking forward to listening to you chat with Mark Moriarty. Cheers, Mary. I suppose Mary's asking about portion sizes.
Yeah, and I think a general rule of thumb, Mary, we spoke a few weeks ago in Gadget of the Week about getting yourself a little scales, or it was last episode, and that really is the starting point to know how much protein you have to eat if you eat meat and fish. So a general rule of thumb is about anywhere between 180 and 220 grams. So that's like between 6 and 8 ounces of either fish or meat. And then really, if you think about that, it's kind of like the shape of your hand if your knuckles are closed. And then what you'd want to have is twice as much vegetables on your plate than that. And then one part carb, whatever that is, be it potato or be it pasta or be it rice. And there's a general rule of thumb that when you're dressing a plate to eat at home. And I think Operation Transformation was discussed here last week. And they have some brilliant guides about the amount of food that you're going to eat. And really, the more you give yourself, the more your stomach will want. So if you are putting a bit too much on the plate, you're going to have to train yourself back down a little bit. So don't go from eating. If you are overfilling your plate a little bit, don't just turn around tomorrow and give yourself nothing to eat. Just dial it back down a little bit.
Yeah.
In a restaurant scenario or in a hotel scenario or whatever, it's a little bit different. People are coming in to eat 3 or 4 courses, but I would approach that exactly the same. So if I'm doing a tasting menu where it's 4, 5 or 6 courses, it gets smaller and smaller because I need to think people have to eat all this food. But generally speaking, about 180 grams of meat is enough, I think, to eat, or fish. And then that also applies to when you're going to do your shopping. So work it out. You know, if you're going to make a bolognese for 4 people, you need about 600 to 800 grams of mince. And I actually think you'll have a little bit left over if you do that. So that might help.
Cheers, Gareth. And thank you, Mary. And don't forget the email address is food@goaloudnow.com.
And just a wee quick one on that. Do what my wife did. And she just said, because she kept eating the dinners, because the dinners were nice. Thank you very much. But I have the small plates. Yeah. And it just says, stop giving me dinner on a large plate. Just give me the smaller plate. And you know what? I use a small plate now myself as well. And it's more than enough food. And you do tend to fill a plate. You know what I mean? If you're at home anyways, not in the restaurant, because in the restaurant as well, we're trying to make things look pretty and look neat and tidy. As Gareth mentioned, you factor in the fact that it's 3, 4, 5, 6 courses. So you get away with that. And sides are usually served separately because it just looks nicer that way. But in our house, very simply, change the plate size and that fixed the problem.
Perfect. That concludes Culinary Conundrums.
So that's us for another week. Una was, I got to say, she hit me for six there, Gareth, with some
topics.
It was an
amazing, honest, needed conversation, I think. And, you know, to see somebody come in and speak that candidly and openly and honestly about a very, very, very difficult subject, I think was very inspiring and something that I think a lot of people will get value from.
Yeah, good for her.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I couldn't stop thinking about her mommy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, not to sound selfish, like obviously your immediate concern is about her. And I mean, she looks amazing now and she is coming across bubbly and happy and full of life. And what an unbelievable business that she's developed. I'll tell you, she's made a good stuff to come back from what she's been through to get to today.
And she obviously has all the right supports around her, and I think she spoke about therapy and the other things, and that's key to managing any of this stuff, I think.
Yeah.
So she's certainly evidenced towards it. But yeah, and also great crack.
She's
did you see the way she lit up as soon as she spoke about, you know, the making the tractor? It was a tractor, wasn't it?
Yeah, John Deere.
Yeah, but all of the, just good crack. And there she was running off to go and teach Camogie or be involved.
Yeah, and my wee niece is in her club.
There you go.
Yeah, wee Emily. Yes, it is a small world, and lovely to hear her talk about Nevin. I know Nevin's a good friend of yours and mine, you know, and it was no surprise to know that he was a solid cat, him and Glenn and Carmel and the crew up in McNean House. So fair play to all of them. All right, that's us for another week. See you soon, brother.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Subscribe for free on the Go Loud app and never miss an episode.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.